Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the 3M Second Quarter 2007 Earnings Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, you will be invited to participate in the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, simply press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and questions will be taken in the order they are received. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star and the number 2. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, July 26, 2007. We would now like to turn the call over to 3M.
Good morning. I'm Matt Ginter, Head of Investor Relations for 3M. Welcome once again, all investors and analysts, to our second quarter 2007 business review. Allow me to make a few brief announcements before we begin today. Today's discussion will follow a series of PowerPoint slides, which are currently available on our investor relations website at 3M.com. These slides will remain on our website, along with an audio replay of today's call for an extended period of time. During the call today, we'll make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views and estimates about future performance and financial results. These statements are based on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Forms 10K and 10Q lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. George Buckley, our CEO, and Pat Campbell, our CFO, will both make formal comments today, then we'll get to your questions. Again, we know how busy you all are during the earnings season, so we'll do everything in our power to keep today's call at about 1 hour. You can help us during the Q&A by limiting yourself to one question and one follow-up so that all questions can be properly addressed. I'll also remind you again that we will host our next investor meeting in St. Paul on the afternoon of October 9th and on the following day, October 10th. The meeting will include a combination of business presentations, informal conversations with management, and a plant tour at one of our nearby manufacturing sites. Look for an email in the next few weeks with specific details on this event. So now, please go to slide number 3, and I'd like to turn the program over to George.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us here this morning. I'm pleased to report another very strong quarter for 3M, and more importantly, for the longer term, our growth agenda continues to gain momentum and deliver results that we had planned and hoped for. So let me start the call by thanking the people of 3M for their outstanding work again this quarter. Without their help, none of this good stuff can happen, so we're very grateful for that. Obviously, we're very pleased with the quarter. Sales topped $6 billion for the first time in our history, and that's up 8% over last year, and up almost 12% if you adjust for the pharma disposal. In a company of our size, that's fabulous growth. Excluding special items, earnings were $1.23 a share, up more than 17% year-on-year, achieved by the combination of great growth and continued operating discipline. Again, the breadth of 3M's strength was evident. Excluding pharma, all of our six businesses posted positive sales growth, though it was a little tougher to do in our electro and communications area. The list of successes from our important large business units continued. In fact, sales grew at double-digit rates in each of the largest global divisions of 3M, namely automotive aftermarket, industrial adhesives and tapes, medical products, occupational health and safety, and optical systems. We haven't seen this in a long time. Along with that, we drove explosive sales growth in several developing countries around the world. For example, sales grew 40% plus in Russia and India, 30% plus in Poland and Turkey, and a hefty 27% in China, just to name a few, with organic unit growth being the primary driver. And we drove outstanding sales growth in some of our largest, well-established subsidiaries, such as Germany, who grew at 12%, and the United Kingdom, who grew at a whopping 53%, driven by a combination of acquisitions, organic volume, and, of course, some positive currency. Progress in the first half of the year gives us continued confidence in our strategic plan for growth, which, as you know, calls for some investments above the rates that we've seen in recent years. The investments include increased funding for R&D, and that's baked into the earnings numbers you're seeing, plus acquisitions and more localized manufacturing capacity to serve customers better. All of these are designed to advance the reputation of our brands and build our enduring franchises. We also continue to invest heavily, but we think prudently, in technology development, particularly that in our core. So far this year, we're investing in R&D at a rate that will result in greater than an 11% increase over last year when adjusted for the divested pharmaceuticals business. Similarly, our capacity investments are on track and will soon start generating positive results. This is another one of the real keys to our success in the future. A couple of weeks ago, I participated in the opening of a new respirator plant in Korea. This was the fastest built of any new plant in 3M's history, just 11 months from breaking ground to startup. Just for your information, a new 3M plant will typically get past the break-even point about three quarters after its opening. But this performance in Korea was an absolutely fabulous achievement by our project manager, John Bloom, and his team of people from Korea and from St. Paul, who I want to recognize here publicly. As you know, 3M has a number of other new plants or plant extensions under construction. We've now successfully knocked off four of them, all on time and on cost. We had some small time slips in our plan in Russia and in China, where some frustrating permitting delays have pushed back the opening by a few months, but none of this was down to 3M, only down to local government issues. You've heard me talk before about the importance of streamlining our supply chain. And these new facilities will give us a good start on this multi-year undertaking. In addition to the Korean plant I already mentioned this quarter, we've opened an optical film plant in Poland, a mixed industrial plant in southern China, and a construction and home improvement tape plant in Canada that we opened in June. On the other side of the ledger, we've also exited several high-cost, underutilized manufacturing facilities in Japan, France, Italy, and the United States, and streamlined several of our U.S. supply chains by relocation of manufacturing equipment from one facility to another. This is in addition to the streamlining activities achieved through plant construction. On the acquisition front, we've now completed eight acquisitions since the beginning of the year, as we continue our steady diet of relatively small, low-risk bolt-ons. These acquisitions are building strength on strength in many of our market-leading businesses right in the core heartland of 3M. I want to point out that while we're accelerating investments in growth for the future, we're maintaining strict discipline on spending in our administrative areas. While these are important to the company, they do not need to grow in line with sales. The bottom line is this. We're driving our growth agenda forward, investing as we said we would, and we're encouraged by the results so far. No doubt we have a great deal still to accomplish, but there is every reason to be very pleased and encouraged by our progress to date. There was lots of good news this quarter for 3M, which is bound to be encouraging for all of us. But before we get ahead of ourselves and get accused of telling you only the happy news, I want to give you a balanced sense of perspective. I think you probably know not everything goes right in a company like ours all the time, and this quarter was no different. For example, we saw continued softness in our roofing granules business, with sales down 13% year over year, although it was up sequentially. While we did very well in construction and home improvement, we did so based on commercial construction and winning new SKUs placements and market share. The underlying residential construction market is still fragile, and I expect it to continue so for the foreseeable future. We also saw very weak markets in electronic interconnects, with sales down 10% year over year. But it's the diversity of our portfolio that overcomes this kind of issue. 3M's strength comes from its technological prowess, yes, but it also comes from its broad market and wide geographical diversity. As I mentioned, while commercial construction is robust, residential construction remains weak. At the beginning of the year, I think most of us believed that we'd see some betterment in the second half of 2007, but this will probably prove to be too optimistic. Growth was strongest internationally, as I mentioned, at 11.7%. Growth in the US was more modest, with sales up 6.2% year over year, if I take out last year's divested pharma sales, and this includes about 2.8% from acquisitions. Healthcare, safety, aerospace, and energy markets are the leaders, as Pat will show you in a moment. There was a time not long ago when we'd celebrate this kind of US growth rate, but not now. So we'll be doing our best to drive for better growth in the coming quarters. Now I'll turn you over to Pat for a more detailed discussion of our second quarter results. Pat?
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. As George has already indicated, not only did we continue to execute on a growth plan with greater than $6 billion of sales in the quarter for the first time in company history, but we're able to maintain exceptional margins and returns while we continue to invest in future growth opportunities. So clearly, our growth plan is on track, and I feel very good about our performance this year. As explained in our press release this morning and shown on slide number 5, second quarter reported earnings per share were $1.25. Included in this result are three special items, which I'd like to explain in some detail for you. First, we announced that we'd phase out operations at our Belmead, New Jersey facility, which produces roofing granules for the asphalt roofing shingle industry and a number of auxiliary products. The closing was driven by a significant reduction in demand from shingle manufacturers in the northeastern part of the United States. Remaining production from Belmead will be consolidated with other 3M facilities. Second, we signed a consent agreement with the state of Minnesota to address potential sources of perfluoroalkyl chemicals near legacy waste disposal sites. Lastly, we recognize a gain from the sale of our Opticon priority control systems and Canoga traffic detection business to TorQuest Partners Incorporated. This business was in our display and graphics segment. After adjusting for these three items, earnings for the second quarter were $1.23 per share. Please refer to today's press release for a more detailed discussion of these special items. As we discussed in last quarter's earnings call, generally accepted accounting principles prevent us from classifying the divested pharmaceutical business as a discontinued operation. Therefore, it creates a year-on-year comparability issue. Q2 2006 revenues for the pharmaceutical business were $196 million, and operating income, excluding special items, was $60 million, impacting earnings per share by 5 cents per share. Adjusting for pharma and special items, earnings per share increased 23% year-on-year. On slide number 6, we compare our second quarter P&L versus last year's second quarter. Excluding special items, earnings per share were $1.23, a year-on-year increase of 17.1% on sales growth of 8%. However, adjusting for pharma, earnings increased 23% on sales growth of nearly 12%. Operating income was up 12.3% to $1.4 billion, or up 18.1% excluding pharma. Operating margins were 22.4%, up 90 basis points. Gross margins were 48.8%, down 130 basis points from last year's second quarter, but in line with the impact related to the pharma divestiture. As George already noted, our expenditure on research and development was up 11% year over year, ex pharma, to support our overall strategy to reinvigorate our core business. SG&A expense was flat year-on-year at $1.3 billion, or up 5% adjusted for pharma, reflecting our continued investment in sales and marketing to support our growth markets while constraining administrative costs. Please turn to slide 7 for a recap of our second quarter top-line performance. Sales in local currency increased towards the upper end of our targeted range at 9.3% worldwide, with 6.2% from the U.S. and 11.3% from our international operations. The biggest driver of this sales growth was organic, with worldwide organic volume up 6.9%, led by a 9.9% increase in international. Acquisitions contributed 2.8% across the board, and prices were down slightly. The pharmaceutical divestiture decreased sales by 3.8%, and currency translation added 2.5%. We are particularly pleased with the growth performance of our international operations this quarter. Within international, Europe turned in the highest local currency growth at 15.8%. 9.5% of that was organic. Rounding out international, Latin America and Canada grew at 10%, while Asia Pacific grew at 8.1%. Before we move to the business segment highlights, please refer to slide 8, where I'd like to comment on our year-to-date progress against our key strategic financial goals. We have described our multidimensional strategy, that is, to accelerate our sales growth without degradation of our operating margins, drive double-digit earnings per share growth, and continue to deliver premium returns on capital. Excluding pharma, sales were up almost 11%, and we drove outstanding leverage with operating income up more than 14% and earnings per share up nearly 18%. And we continue to create value for our shareholders by investing in growth programs, evidenced by our year-to-date return on capital of 22.7%, up 80 basis points from last year's comparable period when you adjust for pharma. As you can see, through 6 months, our plan is working extremely well. Now please turn to slide 9, where I will review our quarterly and year-to-date results by business segment, starting with the Display and Graphics segment. For the second quarter, Display and Graphics sales were up 10.2% to more than $1 billion, the first time in this segment's history. Local currency growth was up nearly 9% and was largely organic. Margins were an impressive 28.7% for the quarter and 30.3% on a year-to-date basis. Year-to-date, Display and Graphics sales have increased more than 5%, with profits up more than 10%. Optical Systems continues to focus on market segmentation with strong penetration in handhelds, computer displays, and LCD televisions. Both sales and profits for Optical Systems were up double digits over the second quarter of last year. Our new optical film converting facility in Poland is online, supporting LCD panel manufacturers as they start up their operations in Eastern Europe. We also are on schedule in scaling up the productivity and capacity of our DBEF manufacturing facilities here in the United States. We expect to see continued accelerated growth over the second half of the year as seasonal LCD TV demand gears up for the holidays. Commercial Graphics posted another solid quarter with strong sales growth. We saw an uplift in the vehicle wrapping market, where we provide films, inks, and other products for this rolling billboard industry. Likewise, traffic safety systems posted noteworthy seasonal growth, driven largely by the road construction season, with particularly strong showings in Europe and Latin America. Please turn to slide 10 for a summary of our results for our largest segment, the industrial and transportation business. Industrial and transportation had another excellent quarter, with sales up 8.5% to $1.8 billion. Local currency sales increased 5.6%, including 1% from acquisitions. Margins improved 70 basis points year on year, coming in at 20% for the quarter. Year-to-date sales are up 7.6% over the first half of last year, while profits increased 10.4%. Through the first 6 months of this year, industrial and transportation margins were 21.5%, or up 50 basis points versus the same period last year. Strong operational discipline and cost control made this margin improvement possible. On a worldwide basis, industrial and transportation business continues to grow faster than their end markets, and not surprisingly, our international growth continues to outpace the U.S. The largest divisions within industrial and transportation posted solid sales growth, including notable performance from our automotive aftermarket, energy markets, automotive, industrial adhesives and tapes, and our abrasive systems divisions. Growth within our automotive aftermarket division was driven largely by abrasives, masking, and refinishing products, where our branded line of products is the preferred choice of body shops around the world. For the car care market, our NASCAR sponsorship continues to strike a chord with a growing number of do-it-yourself car care enthusiasts. Finally, our automotive division delivered good results in the second quarter, led by attachment systems and structural adhesives for mirrors, body moldings, and panels that are used by automotive OEMs. On the investment front, we We have recently increased R&D spending to strengthen our core adhesives and pressure-sensitive tapes technologies. In addition, we have added five relatively small but highly strategic gap-fill acquisitions in the last two quarters to continue to strengthen our core tapes and adhesives platforms. Please turn to slide 11 for details of our consumer and office business, where we've seen outstanding results for both the second quarter as well as year-to-date. Consumer and office sales increased 8.2% to $832 million in the second quarter. Local currency sales were up 6.1%, including 1.3% from acquisitions, primarily due to the October 2006 acquisition of Nylonge, a global provider of household cleaning products, including cellulose sponges. For the first time in many quarters, international growth outpaced our outstanding U.S. market performance. Profits rose 21.3%, and margins jumped 2% compared to the second quarter last year to almost 20%. Year-to-date, sales are up 9%, and compared to the first half of 2006, profits were up almost 20%. Leading the charge for consumer office were our office supplies, construction and home improvement, and home care divisions. At the same time, growth and penetration continued in our core businesses in Europe and Asia. Scouring products, wipes, handles, and cleaning products led the way for home care in mass retail outlets. As many of you know, the third and fourth quarters in our consumer and office business are heavily dependent on having a successful sell-through during the back-to-school and Christmas periods. This will require increased investment in advertising and promotion during the second half of the year. Please now turn to slide 12. Safety, Security, and Protection Services delivered an exceptional and broad-based quarter of growth, with sales up nearly 21% over last year's second quarter. Growth in local currency was up nearly 17%, including approximately two-thirds from acquisitions. Acquired growth was primarily from Security Printing Systems Limited, a leading provider of finished personalized passports and secure cards, and Ewood PLC, a manufacturer of high-performance protective coatings for the oil, gas, water, rail, and automotive industries. Both of these are based in the UK. Operating income rose an impressive 21.9%, with margins at 21.2%, slightly higher than the second quarter of 2006. Year-to-date, sales have increased nearly 20%, with profits up 18%. As I mentioned earlier, we saw across-the-board growth led by corrosion protection, respiratory protection, and protective window films and cleaning solutions for commercial buildings, where we have seen a strong increase in commercial construction in many parts of the world, which is driving increased demand for fire protection and window films. We continue to experience strong demand for personal safety products. We are pleased that our new respiratory protection plan in Korea celebrated its grand opening on July 11th, which was right on schedule. In addition to the growth in personal safety products, we're seeing explosive growth in our corrosion protection business, where we provide our customers with pipe coating technology solutions that extend the life of both underground and above-ground pipelines. With the recent acquisition of Ewood, we can now apply our technologies to both new and existing oil, gas, and water pipelines. Both sales and profit growth for this division were strong double digits. During the second quarter, we continued to see modest improvement in our industrial minerals business for residential asphalt shingles. However, our business was still down year on year, which negatively impacted Safety, Security, and Protection Services second quarter sales and operating profit growth by approximately 2% versus last year. As George mentioned, we continue to expect residential construction to remain weak, so an element of caution is required for the Industrial Minerals Division. Please turn to slide 13 to review second quarter results for Electrical and Communications Business. The results in this business were very mixed. While we continue to experience very strong growth in electrical markets and communications markets, the consumer electronics market has faced significant lower sales, adversely affecting both our electrical solutions and our electronics markets materials divisions. Overall, the electrical communications business has taken the necessary corrective actions to respond to the slower consumer electronics market. At the same time, our electrical markets and communications business delivers strong double-digit bottom-line growth, offsetting the weakness we saw in the consumer electronics markets. Sales were up 3.4% over the second quarter last year, with local currency growth of 1.2% driven by acquisitions. Outstanding discipline continues to generate profits that increased 16% over the same period last year, with margins up 2 percentage points to 19.1%. Year-to-date, sales are tracking with a quarter with an increase of 3.5% and profits increasing 12% versus the first half of 2006. And lastly, please turn to slide 14, where you will find the second quarter highlights for our healthcare business. Healthcare had another outstanding quarter. Local currency growth, including acquisitions, was 19.5% in the quarter, largely organic, with 4.4% from acquisitions. Of the organic growth, 5.6% was a result of a new supply agreements related to the sale of branded pharmaceutical business, in which our drug delivery systems became a source of supply to the acquiring companies. A large part of the acquisition-driven local currency sales came from two recent acquisitions, BioTrace International PLC, a UK-based manufacturer and supplier of microbiology products, and SoftMed, a Maryland-based provider of health information software. We also acquired DMS Chile, a San Diego-based manufacturer of disposable surgical gowns, drapes, packs, and kits. Excluding pharma, sales were up 23.1%, with profits increasing over second quarter 2006 by 32.3% to $277 million. Margins improved 2% to 28%. Year-to-date performance has been equally impressive, with sales up 23.7% overall in the first half of the year and profits up 22%, all excluding the sale of pharma. All businesses within healthcare delivered double-digit growth. Leading the way was our drug delivery systems, where we are a leading provider of inhalation and transdermal drug delivery solutions. We also saw strong growth in our health information systems business, where we are a leading provider of advanced software and services that help healthcare organizations capture, classify, and manage healthcare data. We recently signed an agreement with the state of Maine to build one of the nation's first statewide healthcare information sharing networks. In our dental business, we launched a new product called ProTemp, a preformed, malleable crown material that delivers a custom fit for patients in less than 4 minutes. We also acquired the rights to the Paradex brand of periodontal rinse from Xyla Incorporated. We expect to continue to build the brand through extensive research and development in the preventive dentistry field. And finally, we're continuing to make progress on our commercialization efforts of the digital dentistry technology we acquired with the Brontis acquisition. The product is on track for market tests in the fourth quarter, with commercialization planned for early 2008. The team is working hard, and we are very excited about bringing new products and solutions that will enhance the patient experience and drive productivity to the dental profession. Please turn to slide 15, where I will review a few balance sheet and cash flow metrics. Excluding tax payments related to the gain on sale of the branded pharmaceutical business, free cash flow in the quarter was $866 million, or approximately 95% of net income. Year-on-year working capital turns were down 0.2 turns versus the second quarter last year, but flat sequentially. As we have discussed with you, streamlining our supply chains to improve customer service and reducing working capital is a top priority. Capital expenditures totaled $348 million, an increase of $87 million year-on-year, and an increase of $44 million sequentially. We continue to expect total capital expenditures to be approximately $1.4 to $1.5 billion as we invest in a number of growing and highly profitable businesses. Dividend payments to our shareholders were $346 million, and we aggressively bought back stock during the quarter with gross share repurchases of $1 billion. As of the end of the second quarter, we had $5.2 billion remaining of the total $7 billion authorization that runs through the end of February 2009. Weighted average diluted shares outstanding were down 5% year-on-year and 1.3% sequentially. And finally, our debt-to-cap ratio was 30.2% at the end of the second quarter. This concludes my formal business review. Now I'd like to hand it back over to George for a first half 2007 scorecard and his closing comments. George?
Thank you very much, Pat. Please turn to slide 16 where you'll see a quick recap of our 2007 progress against the outlook that we provided for you in January of this year. I think you'll see that this slide underlines the confidence that Pat and I share for the second half of 2007. As I said during the first quarter call, our main 2007 priorities are clear. Firstly, increase the horsepower of our growth engine and leverage it to the bottom line. Secondly, continue the drive for stable factory costs and gross margin improvement. And thirdly, to have flawless startup of our new manufacturing lines and plants. So far this year, we're doing rather better than our forecast. Therefore, we're raising both our sales and EPS forecast for the year. Through 6 months, we've delivered local currency growth of 8.4%. So we're now expecting full-year local currency sales growth of between 7 and 10%, up from our prior expectation of 6 to 10%. Reported earnings per share are now expected to be in the range $5.40 to $5.60, up from the previous range of $5.20 to $5.45, including a net benefit from special items of 60 cents and 70 cents. Year-to-date operating margins are currently running at 23.4%, quite a bit ahead of our full-year expectations of 22 to 22.5%. Our effective tax rate for the first 6 months is 32.9%, within the range of our expectations, but we may well see a slight uptick for the last half of the year. Lastly, we expect capital expenditures of between $1.4 and $1.5 billion for the year, on track with our estimates at the beginning of the year. Capital expenditures for the company through 6 months were $652 million, and we continue to expect full-year CapEx to fall within our originally stated range. As far as the third quarter goes, we have somewhat tougher year-over-year percentage comparables, but in absolute sales dollars, we expect more of the same on growth. We also have some planned increases in spending year over year, and we want to preserve flexibility on that, partly in plant startups, partly in higher advertising and merchandising, and some in higher R&D investments. Some folks will probably accuse us of being a bit conservative here with our outlook, but we think sufficient uncertainty remains in the Asian electronic markets and the US residential construction market that we are planning a route of careful and prudent, but nevertheless, steady progress. And with that, I'd like to turn the call over for questions. Thank you so much for listening.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star, then the number two. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before entering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague with Citigroup.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
George or Pat, I wonder if you could just give us a little bit better sense of, you know, the revenue opportunity that you ultimately hope to kind of untap as you get all these capacity additions online.
Well, I'll have a crack at it, Jeff. When we finish the current round of investments, and remember that the current round of investments are only a start, it's kind of a rolling set of investments, that will add somewhere around $3 billion or there of sales value of goods produced. So, you know, we're probably increasing our total capacity of the order, manufacturing capacity of the order, 10-15%. So it's a few billion dollars of uptick, but of course it depends on how the plants load, Jeff, as to what the sales growth rate expands. But we're actually building these plants because we've got a lot of demand which is unmet. So we hope these plants will get orders and respond relatively quickly, and it will be a piece of the puzzle in accelerating our growth rate, especially since we're there, Jeff, and we don't have these long supply chains in order today and wait for 60 days to get something from the U.S. they'll be in that location and can get product in a few days. So we really do think this is going to help a great deal.
And just as a follow-on to that, this normal three-quarter break-even, does that, in fact, get accelerated by the fact that some of this demand is in hand waiting for the plant to come on, or is there still, should be the expectation of some growing pains along the way as you do this stuff?
No, I think they, in those plants where there is ready demand, I think it will be a little better than what we said. Yeah, I think you're right to point that out. But we're just trying to give you a sort of a middle-of-the-road feel for how this kind of stuff works. Obviously, if you have a plant which starts up absolutely superbly with huge demand, it'll be faster. If you have one with teething troubles, it'll be longer. So we're trying to give you some idea. This is not 2 years to get these things contributing, and nor is it 2 months. So we're trying to give you some kind of feel for the middle of the ground, Jeff.
And just one final one, and I'll pass it. On this benefit in healthcare from the supply agreement, should we expect that kind of 5% bump, you know, for the next few quarters until you lap that, or was that kind of a one-time channel fill thing in the quarter?
No, Jeff, you should expect that up through the 1 year, up through the 1 year period.
Great, yep. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question will come from the line of Mike Judd with Greenwich.
Congratulations on a great quarter.
Thanks, Mike.
You know, as you look at the third quarter, can you talk a little bit about some of the seasonality effects, obviously, in your business in Europe, et cetera, and, you know, what sort of economic assumptions that you have for the second half of the year? And then just lastly, what raw material inventory accounting method do you guys use? Is it weighted average, LIFO, FIFO?
Let me have a crack at the first part, and Pat can have a crack at the second. In Europe, you typically have a roughly a month's holiday, sometimes as long as 5 weeks in some of the countries there. So things get a little bit quieter. People aren't around, and so there is some cooling there. But to compensate from that, what happens back here in the United States, we have a couple of things. There are big factors in the way we grow in the third quarter, and that is we have back to school in the consumer office, very, very heavy sales growth that takes place in back to school. And, of course, even by this time, toward the back end of the third quarter, the mass merchants are stocking up on their shelves for the holiday season. So there's a lot of activity in consumer office. And then also in the consumer electronics and optical films areas, you also see fairly heavy sell-in. Assuming the sell-through, you see fairly heavy sell-in into the TV business in this kind of time frame. So there are some seasonal lifts, but of course there's some kind of maybe some cooling, a little bit of construction. So they're the kind of puts and takes that take place in a company like ours in that particular season.
Okay, and Mike, this is Pat. On the raw material, we do use FIFO, and the reality is our raw materials right now are pretty stable. So it's obviously got pluses and minuses within that. So not a big impact.
So there wasn't much of a FIFO benefit, even though we had. Rising prices?
No.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Our next question will come from the line of Scott Davis with Morgan Stanley.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Scott.
The only thing it looks like kind of to pick on for the quarter is working capital, and I might have been zoning out when you went through some of this. Pat, so my apologies if you mentioned it, but given it looks like receivables up 14% year over year. Can you just talk through maybe a couple of things? I mean, one, kind of explain that a bit, and then also talk about where you envision working capital turns going, rest of 07 and into 08.
Yeah, Scott, I guess you had to find something, huh? But in response to your question on working up, as we've kind of discussed, as we try to grow and with our supply chain situation, we've kind of hit a wall here a little bit on turns. Specifically here in the quarter, our receivables are up a little bit. Partially it reflects the nature of the shipment pattern of some of our businesses during the quarter. Nothing unusual, though. from that standpoint. We're running about five turns, and I expect that number is going to remain stable here for a period of time until we start to see some of the improvements in our supply chain work and some of the capacity coming on. So I don't see that here in the near future. So I think we're going to go sideways here for a while on working capital performance.
Okay, fair enough. And just following up a little bit on what Jeff is talking about as far as your factories coming up, and want to talk specifically about yields in your D&G segment and Alabama versus Poland. I mean, what is years ago I used to cover Corning, and I understand kind of how important it is to get those yields up fast. I mean, how long does it really take, and what is the learning curve there to really get yields up to a point where you can start making kind of a normalized margin?
Yeah, Scott, first of all, let me just clarify something. The plants in the U.S. are manufacturing facilities that are producing the jumbo material, or effectively the raw materials for the converting sites. That is a different kind of facility than the facility in Poland, which is really a converting location, where effectively they take jumbos of material and effectively, you know, cut and size those for the OEMs. So completely different kinds of manufacturing processes. Converting plants, of course, will start up a lot quicker and will have relatively higher yield than the material production side of the operation. But George and I are never satisfied with the yield that we get out of our manufacturing processes. And your point's spot on. There is a lot of opportunity to continue to drive productivity and cost through yield enhancement. And when you look at the value of the material flowing through specifically a DBEF plant, getting the yields up in that plant are absolutely crucial as we continue to fight in that in a very price intensive industry. So that is something that we remain focused on. The yields continue to get better, but the nature of some of those operations are, periodically you'll have a little bit of a stumble, but the underlying yield improvements within that plant have improved significantly, and we continue to press for higher yields.
Scott, part of the culture of 3M is we have this sort of obsessive cost down mentality, and yield is obviously a piece of that puzzle. And we understand when we're manufacturing this kind of stuff in hugely competitive price markets, and where the capital is expensive, yield is one of the really big keys to the door, the keys to a solution of a highly profitable business. And so you're trying always to keep the yield improvements ahead of the price reductions. Essentially, that's the battle you're fighting. And for the most part, we do that fairly well. And I don't think this is ever going to be a time when this is not part of the way we think, the air we breathe. When we wake up in the morning, we're thinking about how the heck do we drive yield.
Makes sense, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
Our next question will come from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Morning, Steve.
I just had a quick question on the outlook for the second half. I'm a little bit. It's kind of tough to parse the. You talk about 6 to 10% growth, but that includes some acquisitions. You're still thinking about a point and a half contribution from acquisitions for the full year, or is that a little bit higher?
It's probably a little bit higher than that for the whole year. It's probably closer to 2.
Okay. So you are looking for a deceleration in the second half of the year as far as core growth how should we think about the core X acquisitions, X divestitures, X 4X type of number for the back half of the year?
Steve, assume we'll do something similar, okay? Within that range that we've given you of 7 to 10, we'll do something similar. Obviously, George and I are continuing to drive. We have to continue to drive sequential growth in the business, but to kind of nail that down to any one quarter is obviously a little more difficult. But we are not anticipating or trying to forecast any kind of slowdown.
Right. So these concerns that you mentioned around, obviously housing and things like that, that's not enough to kind of make for a deceleration in back half of the year.
No, Steve, and you know, as George mentioned in his pitch, you know, what's great about this company is the breadth of our portfolio, geographically and product-wise. Very rarely will all pieces of the economy be hitting, okay, on all cylinders at all points in time. So, you know, you have a lot of, you know, gives and takes within that. The point we're making on the housing side is we don't necessarily see that, you know, coming back, you know, right away, but we also don't see it having a major impact on our, you know, growth rates.
Right. I can't imagine it's that big of a percentage of your sales. And then lastly, just on D&G, there was a little bit of chatter that maybe somebody in this kind of long chain of buyers and assemblers is loading up on a little bit of inventory. Are you worried that that there was maybe some of this demand was pulled into the second quarter and we're going to have, you know, a little bit of an earlier than expected season in the LCD industry? And then how does that kind of play into your forecast there for the rest of the year?
Well, there's no question, Steve, we've seen continued strong demand in that area. And oddly enough, we're getting back into some areas that we once lost some presence. So that's clearly good news. But there appears to be relative stability. You know, we expect double-digit sales growth, kind of following the pattern that we've seen. We don't expect to see anything that's really going off the rails. Now, whether they buy ahead, you could argue that if they buy ahead, it may even be positive and not necessarily negative. So, you know, we'll always see some ebbs and flows in this market, Steve. But I think what the great news that we've seen really in the last two quarters is this company has done well even without the optical business doing well. That was a remarkable turn for our company. So don't expect to see any major surprises in this at this juncture.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
Our next question will come from the line of David Begleiter with Deutsche Bank.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, David.
George and Pat, can you quantify how much more spending you guys did in sales, marketing, advertising, promotion in Q2 than Q1?
It would be a single-digit number, Dave, on a year-over-year basis. Well, you take pharma out, okay, of the base, and then, you know, when you look at a new adjusted base, that would be about what it is. We also gave you a little bit of a tip-off here, though, in the back half of the year that we'll probably spend some more money here in ad merch in consumer and office. And we, last year, when you look at what we spent in consumer and office, we spent a little more of that in the front half of the year. This year, we've kind of saved some of that for the back half of the year for the back to school and holiday season. So there will be a little bit of a mix in timing as to when we make some of those investments in the consumer business, but it would be a single digit number. And as we mentioned, on the flip side is what we're consciously doing is constraining the cost in the administrative side, so we can continue to fund those growth activities on the sales and marketing side.
Fair enough. And on the four new plants that came online in June and July, were they ahead of schedule, on schedule, behind schedule?
Well, schedule is kind of an interesting conversation, Dave, because first of all, to answer your question, literally, they were all on schedule. But you also have to understand that what George and I are driving is tighter schedules and get things done sooner. So other than the two plants that George kind of talked about, China and Russia, where we had some permitting problems, which are kind of more of a future startup issue, everything else is really right on track.
Leslie, optical film pricing tracking your expectations?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Your next question will come from the line of Dimitri Silverstein with Longbow Research.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations on a very nice quarter once again.
Thanks, Dimitri.
A couple of questions, if I may, just to follow up on some of the things you said earlier. The strong growth that Consumer and Office has seen in Europe and international, that's quite a turnaround from what has been the pattern in this business. Do you see this as a sustainable development? Is it something that happened in the geographies, or is it something that you've done to change your approach to the market?
I guess to answer your question, Dimitri, we do see it as a sustainable position. We've been, and it's really kind of a little bit of a, you have to kind of segregate this between markets internationally. Asia and Latin America have been running, pretty good in the past, but we've accelerated the growth. Some of those markets are, of course, as the prosperity of some of those markets starts to develop, it actually improves the ability for people to buy and so forth. But we've also made a much more conscious effort to grow our consumer business internationally. And that's between the head of the consumer business, Mona Zari, and Inga Tulin, who runs international. We're dedicated to growing that business. We've seen good growth in Europe, which is the first good sign we've seen for some time. So it is a conscious strategy that we have to grow that business internationally.
And Dimitri, we're also on the hunt for some other products that can help us fill out those offerings to retailers. Yes, the economies over there have bettered, but it's been a very conscious strategy on the part of Mo, Inger, and myself, and in particular Inger and myself, as we've pushed it on Mo's behalf outside the country, and it is now responding. We're very, very pleased with the outcome.
Very good. Then to follow up on what you said about the industrial and transportation segment and the good growth you experienced, not just in the automotive aftermarket, but actually automotive OEM business. Yeah. Again, is this a sign of recovery? Is it mostly U.S. or is it the international markets and perhaps China and India that are driving this growth? Kind of what's behind the recovery in the business that gave you problems the last couple of quarters?
Well, I say automotive has not been a problem for us. First of all, we sell into all the major OEMs, so depending upon who's winning and losing impacts our business a little bit, but we are very effective with all of the OEMs. Actually, the U.S. had decent performance this quarter as well. So it was a very broad-based result within the automotive group.
Okay, so it's more of a market growth than a share gain on your part.
Well, I say the auto production really has not moved that much.
On a global basis. Right.
You can argue, and penetration becomes a little bit difficult because, every one of these products is a designed-in product. So some products will, have the need for our products, others won't. So a lot of it has to do with the design cycles of the auto manufacturers as well.
Okay. And then a final question on consumer electronics that's been impacting your revenues in the electronic communication segment. Can you give us a little more granular kind of detail on what's going on in that market and why it's been weak in the second quarter, and what do you see for the second half of the year?
Well, I think, Dimitri, the way that we understood what was going on here was it starts actually several quarters back. There were no real blockbuster products in the marketplace in the fourth quarter. You didn't see the big Xbox launches or whatever it would be, the snazzy consumer products. With the exception of LCD TVs, it was relatively slow.
You got the iPhone.
It seemed that the distribution channel had a lot of inventory in it. It's been bleeding down. And now, from my perspective, we rolled that down with the channel as they were bleeding off inventory, and that's what you've seen in the first couple of quarters here. If there's to be a turn in that industry, I cannot imagine, for example, consumer electronics is going to leave that market alone and not have two or three blockbuster products in the holiday season here. And so we ought to see, if it's going to happen, Dimitri, it's going to happen this quarter. I don't know that we can say that we're optimistic that it will pick up, but if it's going to pick up, this is the time it's going to.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, George.
Thanks a lot.
Our next question will come from the line of Deane Dray with Goldman Sachs.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Deane.
George, it was very interesting. You started off your prepared remarks talking about reinvigorating R&D, and it's one thing to throw more dollars at it, increase the budget, but it's something else to start actually seeing innovation and new products. So what are the specific goals that you're looking for? What's the time frame, and especially in terms of new product introduction?
Well, we look at this in a few different ways, Dean, and thank you for your question. Because you're absolutely right. It isn't only about just sort of taking wheelbarrows of money over there and say, please go try to spend it wisely. In point of fact, what we've done, some of the things that have happened in the organization is we've reconstituted our 15%, shall we say, free time for our people. Now, you might say, why would you want to do that? The point is it's about creating an environment, Dean. Relatively few people use that, but it's about creating an environment where people have a sense of controlling their own destiny and allowing them to have those creative juices spill over into product creation. So we did that. We also got our senior guys engaged in let's assess the big possible blockbuster products that we've got. And can we better assemble ourselves, our skills, our technical skills, to bring these along a little faster? Now, you always get those comments from people about, this is R&D, I can't rush around in a dark room that's got spikes stuck on the inside of the walls. That's the classic thing you get told by the R&D people. But the reality is what we're trying to do, Dimitri, is organize ourselves. We can identify some of the real big products if we can make the technological breakthroughs. And so that's what we're trying to do. So we're being a bit more focused and rifle shot on two or three of the big programs in the hope that we can advance this. The other thing that we're sowing in the seeds in the R&D communities is, look, innovation is who we were. It's a part of who we will be. It is, nothing has changed here. Let's get back to developing more and more new products, and let's get back to developing them faster. So we've begun to change the culture. We took out a lot of the sort of non-relevant metrics out of the organization. So I think overall, Dean, what we've done is lubricated, shall we say, the means of getting the R&D done and the innovations out, and reinstill the sense of urgency into that organization. Kind of all soft stuff, but all very effective.
But it also sounds though you don't want to set a specific goal in terms of new product introductions or a vitality?
We do. In fact, we track a vitality index for all of these businesses, Dean, but they widely vary. You know, a vitality index which is necessary for automotive is very, very different than a vitality index which is necessary for optical systems. We are moving up that curve. We've kind of slipped back a little bit on that measure. I mean, notionally, as a company, we want to be up well up into the 20s when it's blended across all the company. But we will see those variabilities that I talked of earlier. So it's a move of probably a good 10 percentage points in the absolute measure is what we're looking for, Dean.
Great. Just last question. How does that product or the acquisition pipeline look for these bolt-ons that you say you're focused on?
It's one of the reasons we did them. Some of them are very, very good. I was at one about 2 weeks ago, Dean. In fact, it was the E. Woods acquisition in the UK. And we bought that for the coatings. You know, they do internal pipe coatings. Our existing business did external pipe coatings. When I got there, it felt like I'd gone into Aladdin's cave. They had coatings for water pipes, for earthenware pipes, for steam pipes. They had coatings for walls. They had antimicrobial coatings for hospitals. When I walked away from there, Dean, it was, okay, well, this looks like a great acquisition for the core, but my word, did anybody really realize we had all these other wonderful products out there? So we're actually now trying to figure out in our company how to take that and create it as a business and make sure we get an extra kind of top-up supercharge out of that particular acquisition. And that's kind of going on in many of the ones that we're buying, Dean.
In the pipeline, expect more of those?
Yes, expect more of those. You know, you'll see, I think, a similar number of acquisitions for the year as you saw last year. I hope at some stage we'll be able to get one or two bigger ones, not blockbuster ones, but that's my hope. We'll as we've oiled the squeaky wheels at the bottom end of these, that we'll see one or two slightly bigger ones too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
Our next question will come from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan with Lehman Brothers.
Good morning. You guys have had this sort of trend of, you know, gross margins coming down. Obviously, the pharma divestiture is part of that, and restraining the administrative costs. Can you give us a sense of, you know, can SG&A continue to go down as a percentage of sales, and just sort of give us a sense of what you're looking for from that gross margin SG&A dynamic in the back half and maybe into next year?
Yeah, Shannon, I guess to answer your specific question is, yes, we do see it can continue to come down. There's no reason why SG&A has to grow at the rate of revenue. But you have to be very, very disciplined about that. You want to invest in the right areas that can heavily influence growth, but then you also have to be very disciplined in the areas that don't drive growth. So there's really no reason why that can't continue to be that way. And you look at where most of our higher percentage of growth is really in the international markets, and our international markets actually have lower SG&A structures than we do here in the U.S. So that is also favorable from just a percent perspective. On the gross margin side, we have to work that day to day. That's a combination of the yield improvements that we talked about previously, but also mixed management within our business and pricing and so forth. So the way we manage this is we have to manage growth, gross margin, and SG&A and R&D expenditures in balance here to give us the results. So we continue to manage that, and we think we can get the top line growth and continue to invest in the business, get more economic profit and overall shareholder value as we do that. So we see the model work very well, and there's no reason to believe that it can't work in the future.
And just given what you said about, consumer and office and some of the other back half assumptions, I mean, you expect, that as a percentage of sales, SG&A is going to be more in the second half than it was in the quarter?
We're talking about minor amounts here. And part of that is discretionary as we see how the quarter evolves from a revenue standpoint. If I see a slight tick up in spending, it's not going to bother me because we'll be doing it for the right, for the right reasons. So I'm not going to give you a specific number, but that number will float a little bit depending upon when we place some of our ad merch spending.
Okay, and just one last one on price. It was a little less of a negative this quarter. I mean, you made the comment about optical pricing being sort of in line with your expectations, but did that get any better, or where did sort of the price get a little better than it's been?
It's you have to kind of look at it across the board. We have some businesses that continue to get very, very good pricing. Other industries are not favorable. It ends up being more of a mix of business for us. There really is no significant change in our overall trend.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Your next question will come from the line of Chris Kotowicz with A.G. Edwards.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Chris.
I wanted to follow up on Jeff's question a little bit on the incremental investments. You're going to start to see, some tailwinds at the top line. Are we talking about a couple points of your growth in the second half of the year coming from these new plants? Not to get too specific, I guess, but should we think of it that way? And maybe as a follow-up to that, is this all incremental, or is there any cannibalization of existing sales, from these new plants?
Well, I think the number, Chris, is too high, the one you just quoted. Obviously, there's a possibility as the plants load up, it's going to accelerate. There is some cannibalization goes on because you may be working a plant, as we are in the UK, 7 days, 24 hours a day, and some of that export volume that goes out to Asia, we'll offload and we'll produce in the Korean plant. So there is some of that, cannibalization. But what it does help, though, Chris, is the operating efficiency and your ability to respond to the customers fast. So you certainly wouldn't see any benefit in sales by offloading a plant in Britain and loading up a plant in Korea. But what you will see is faster response times, customers that will more customers will buy from you, and you will see operating efficiency go up. So you will see net betterment. But I think that you know, the way that you might think about a plant like this is a plant like this might load up, fully load up over a year, perhaps a year and a half. You need to stretch it out just a little bit. It doesn't all happen at once.
Okay, and then on the sort of related but switching gears, you know, you talked about, I think, fairly extensively how you've got a lot of unmet demand. You didn't have the ability to supply it, and we just talked about that. I would think that that would actually help you on, like, receivables terms, right? Because I would think your ability to go in and talk to a customer who wants more product than you can deliver, that you'd actually see an improvement in your terms. Is it just that you've got so much pressure in the, I guess, the larger piece of the business where the you don't have that same dynamic? It overwhelms the other piece or not? That's something I'm struggling with, because I would think you'd actually see, you know, turns going up there.
Well, Chris, actually, I guess maybe two thoughts here. One is our receivable turns outside the U.S. are not as favorable as they are inside the U.S. So as the international markets grow faster than the U.S., that's going to be a drag, okay, on our overall turn number. That's just the nature of the businesses. And, you know, almost all the segments that we compete in are very, very competitive. And you compete on, you know, not only product, but you compete on price in terms and so forth. Actually, our turns are not that bad from a competitive perspective. So that does, you know, that doesn't worry me. We keep a very close eye on, you know, how competitive we are from a industry perspective.
Okay. So you don't get the sense that, you know, you're making investments in new plants, and so, you know, the dynamic, if all this comes through, is going to be that the supply-demand imbalance is less out of whack. I mean, that's not going to be favorable to your negotiating position. But that doesn't concern you?
No, it doesn't. No.
Okay.
But Chris, what happens is, as you have capacity, and you have capacity and you can respond quickly, It may not affect receivable turns, but it certainly affects WIP turns. And you know, the classic way you think about this is if you plot sales versus the fill rate, it's a Gaussian curve, a normal distribution. And as long as you can get you make big gains in the early parts of the curve. Of course, the difference between sales at 97% fill rate and 99% fill rate are not very large, but those between 50% service rate and 80% service rate are. So this is a strategy, Chris, that's not necessarily designed to attack the receivables issue. It's something designed to attack the WIP and the sales growth issue. Service rates.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Our next question will come from the line of John McNulty with Credit Suisse.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Morning, John.
Morning, John.
Just a couple quick questions. A lot of the companies that we deal with that are ramping up, facilities are really having a tough time with the overall ramp-up cost tied to materials, getting the labor, getting the engineers, that type of thing. I noticed you didn't raise your CapEx forecast. I'm wondering how you're actually dealing with these cost escalations.
Well, first of all, I guess, John, there is cost escalation going on in the kind of the building construction trade. There's no doubt about that. You know, we continue to benchmark construction cost and what it should take to complete these facilities, just like it is in the manufacturing process. And we, you know, there's some, you know, prioritization we need to make within our capital plan, but nothing that is that material to us at this point in time, but something that we do keep a very close eye on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, John. I was going to say this, George. One of the things that we've been doing is trying to find a way to design fit-for-purpose plants, not necessarily Taj Mahals. And so I think we've been much, much more frugal with the way we've been spending money on these plants. And we are actually getting a, not to use a kind of too colloquial phrase, a bigger bang for the buck now. We're trying to be a lot more efficient with the way that we're spending this this stuff. And also another thing that happens in capital programs, John, is what tends to happen is time is money. Pat mentioned early, it kind of probably went under the radar scope, but Pat made the point earlier that we've been putting a lot of pressure on our people to try to find ways to get plants that were built formally in 2 years or two and a quarter, build them in a year. And that really helps a lot, a great deal in keeping control of the capital. You know, you may here and there have some money you spend extra for expediting stuff, but generally speaking, on a project, time is money. If you can cut time, you can cut money.
Okay, no, that's helpful. And then just one quick follow-up. Seasonally, your second quarter margins tend to be better than the first quarter. That definitely wasn't the case this time around. Can you give us some color as to why that actually may be? Is it some of the cost that you know of ramping up and revitalizing this growth, or is there something else maybe at work here?
One issue that's changed versus history is our stock option expensing. You know, since we've adopted expensing of stock options, we have a much bigger hit here in the second quarter versus the first quarter. That probably has an impact of about a point or so in our margins in the second quarter. So depending upon, you know, how far back you're looking, that has kind of changed the kind of the rate, you know, the Q1, Q2 comparison.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Our next question will come from the line of John Inch with Merrill Lynch.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Hey, Pat, just to follow up on that point you made on stock options, I had thought maybe we were looking for about 9 cents in EPS impact from stock options versus the 7 you reported. The question is that 2 cents sort of still there and comes back sometime in the second half, or was there something slightly different about the dynamic this quarter than what you maybe expected?
No, John, you have a good memory. Actually, it's made up of two pieces. The 9 cents actually was probably 8.5 that was rounded up to 9. So there's two elements. The actual stock option expense was a little bit below what we anticipated. But we also, with the increase in the stock price, we had a number of reissuances of people effectively executing stock options in the quarter, which actually provides a much more favorable tax deduction as well. So it's really kind of a big piece of us in the kind of the after-tax calculation of the EPS.
And that doesn't come back to hit you?
No.
Okay. I want to actually go back to the electro business. I think, George, you mentioned the interconnect business down 10%.
Yep.
What would that business have been ex the interconnect business? Kind of mid-single digit?
Yes.
Well, let me kind of go back. You know, as I said, there's kind of a tale, okay, of a couple different markets there.
Okay.
The electrical markets and the communications markets were up double digits.
Okay.
The electronics market and then also the electronics materials, obviously, really the electronic solutions was actually, you know, down in the quarter. So it was really kind of a very mixed bag within that segment this quarter, John.
So just trying to understand sort of how you were calling this out for the rest of the year. I mean, it looks like you've got some, you know, significantly easier comps coming up in the second half. Would you expect the growth rate in the electro business to pick up then, kind of sequentially, or should we model it sort of, you know, around this type of threshold?
I think we don't have those forecasts yet, John, but I think situationally, we would expect some improvement in that business in the third and fourth quarter. It remains now to be seen whether that comes. There's another piece of this business, which is end-of-life flex circuits, John. So you've got, as Pat tried to say to you, there's several moving parts here. You've got the flex business, which is kind of going end-of-life. You've got a soft sort of market in electronics where they're working off inventory. That's a factor, and then obviously a somewhat unknown factor as to how much new product might get launched in the third and fourth quarter that will pull through product now. But the pipeline itself is in good shape, John. So if the demand side of this equation gets going, and you know the consumer side of this business gets going, we will see some improvement in demand. That's obviously what we hope for.
Okay. Just the question is, you know, on if you look at the CapEx investments for these plants. the 19, I guess, that are ongoing. George or Pat, do you have a sense of what the potential P&L impact is from these growth initiatives? I understand you've articulated well what the CapEx impact is, but do you think there's a few pennies of impact on the P&L side that's being absorbed today?
John, whenever you go through a phase of construction, obviously the construction phase doesn't really hurt your P&L, but when you do go through the startup phase, you do absorb some P&L hit. As George was saying, it takes about 3 quarters, okay, of operation before you kind of get to a break-even point on these plants. So as you do launch them, you do absorb some penalty. But within the scale of the business we have, we think this is a very manageable expense.
So nothing that you would call out, but it's somehow $0.05 each year or something.
No.
There's a number, John, and it's finite, but we don't think it's large.
Okay. Well, one final one for me, George. I know you have somewhat personally sort of undertaken some initiatives to try and squeeze some more profit out of the optical films line, whether it be sort of production or perhaps raw material inputs. Maybe could you give us a little bit of a sense of sort of where that stands, some of those initiatives, and as we kind of model out profitability in the D&G segment, do you think there is actually upside from kind of this 28% to 30% range that we seem to be, trending in today?
Well, there's one was a sort of some psychological pressure that I put on my colleagues about yield and about the need to get that up. To their great credit, they've now taken that bit and run it with it. But there was another aspect of this is all of the waste that was coming out of those plants, John. Because when you're in those, especially in the jumbo manufacturing, the yields are in the 50%. Range depends on exactly what the process is. So you've got a lot of material you can reuse, and we successfully, to the great credit of the chemists here in the company, they're able to we used to just dump all that scrap in landfills, and what we're doing now is we're taking a lot of that scrap, reprocessing it, extracting the NDC, one of the sort of key chemicals that's expensive and has gone up in price a lot in recent times. And reusing those, we do some blending, and then reusing that material to produce some of the plastic parts for consumer office. That's just started. There's a few products now are getting their resin materials from waste optical film reprocess. So, and it seems to have worked. And obviously, we'll try to expand that as much as we can. And it'll over time, it'll make its small incremental lifts to the consumer office business and to D&G. Not big numbers, but it's the right thing to do.
So
going pretty well, John.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying the question is people, I think, are wondering, can you hold the profit at these levels based on pricing pressures and industry dynamics? That's kind of a $64,000 question. So, what are you thinking? Is there any reason to think that D&G takes a step down, or can we hold at these kind of profit ranges?
I think blended, we don't see D&G's overall margins going down in any dramatic way, but there are many sort of battles, many dog eat dog battles to be had yet, John. And as the market matures, it's my belief that the pricing pressure will actually ease, and so some of this will begin to go away quite naturally. And you actually might even, we've also seen this in other markets, John, as markets mature. They stabilize for a little while, and then you get a little bit of recontenting. They kind of come up out the other side of the valley, so to speak. So it's going to be a constant battle, John, for us to drive yield, drive recycling, drive productivity by doing increasing line rate speeds, doing double width materials, all sorts of things like that come together to help you mitigate some of the pressures on price. But I think net in OSD, there'll always be some incremental downward pressure on margins. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, John. Have fun.
That concludes our question and answer portion of our conference. At this time, we will turn the call back over to 3M for some closing comments.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this morning. I'd just like to reiterate that while there's still much to do, we're very pleased with our first half performance. and we're very confident in our ability to execute in the second half of 07 and more importantly, beyond. Thanks a lot, everybody. Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. You may all disconnect, and thank you for participating.